welcome to this week's episode of Time Added On. We're back after the international break. A 1-1 draw at home to Burnley. We'll look back at all the action from that one and review a nice easy game at Man City coming up in a couple of days' time. First of all, Tom, welcome to the pod. Are you well? Have you recovered is the main thing, because we were just talking, weren't we? We had an epic trip to the City Ground on Monday. I got back home at 2 a.m. You were after me. Can't believe you sat and ordered McDonald's after you got home at 3 a.m. But the less said about that. Couldn't get Frankie and Benny's at that time. No. Are you good?
Yeah, I'm all good. Had to happen. I felt like I needed it. Plus, I've been in Romania the days before. So,
jet setting
about all over the place. So, I just felt like I needed something. But yeah, I've recovered. I've had time to digest fully. Now, that's not the McDonald's I'm talking about either. That's the football. So.
You've had 48 hours. We've had 48 hours to digest it. I don't think we were going to record the pod yesterday. I think either our energy levels would have really been much good. Not really worth the listen, but we're back. We're on good form. And actually, I'm quite pleased we took a little bit of time to reflect on this one, because it's an interesting game, Burnley. Let's kick off and talk about the Burnley game, because it was an interesting performance. It was an interesting chat on the drive back, wasn't it, on Monday night. You could look at it in two ways. There was obviously a lot of excitement coming into the game. A lot of our chat on the way up to Nottingham on Monday was, you know, a lot of it tongue-in-cheek, right? But in terms of now, where would Forest be setting their sights? Talk of passports being at the ready, etc. As I say, very much tongue-in-cheek. But there was an expectation, right? There was a lot of excitement. The buzz around that last day of the window and what Forest did over the summer. It was finally good to get back on the pitch and get back to supporting the boys. But, I mean, what did you make of the game overall? As I say, it was an interesting reaction, I think. There's been quite an interesting reaction on the socials as well to this one. 1-1, good point, or 2 points dropped?
Well, yeah, I mean, on paper, I would say it's 2 points dropped. But, I think there's the context around it, I suppose, in terms of this is your first game where you've probably got, you know, this is the squad now. You know, before that, before the international break, and obviously Chelsea didn't count because it all happened in the night, just before that game. So you've now actually got your squad, some of whom, you know, still haven't really had much time in Nottingham and haven't had, a lot of time on the training pitch with the actual squad and how it is right now. So it kind of felt that way in some respects. It kind of felt like, you know, you're setting up your team and it kind of felt like, I know we are early in the season still because it's only game five, but, you know, it kind of felt like starting again at the start of the season because, it was even a new setup and that surprised me in terms of the approach to the game. It's not what I expected. Obviously, when we spoke about it, you know, beforehand, you know, I was saying I expect Burnley to have a lot of the ball and Forest to just continue to ease themselves into, you know, maybe playing a certain way or a different way, but that they would still continue with their counter-attacking way against the possession side. And they really, it was quite different to all of that and maybe what my expectations were anyway.
I think there's probably, I think the one thing that, well, there's two things that I came away from Monday night feeling in terms of the result. We'll come on to the performance in a minute. But I think you have to give, I think people don't give Burnley as much credit as perhaps they should. Now, I know that's, you know, teams coming up, Forest being at home, given Forest record last season, you would expect Forest to be targeting those games and looking at those going, that's a 3 points there. But I think out of the three clubs that came up, Burnley are by far the best equipped to stay up. I think, you know, they romped the league last year and obviously they've invested over the summer and they've not had the best. Obviously, they've only played four games because their game against Luton got called off. But they obviously, in the three games beforehand, we talked on the pod last week, they've obviously taken a few beatings at home. Obviously beat us in the cup in what was a funny game, but with this one, I got the impression that Vincent Kompany almost said as much after the game. He almost went a little bit back to basics. And yeah, to what you said, we didn't get what the Burnley performance that we were probably expecting. I think they probably went back to basics, tried to keep it solid, and it was more of a 50-50 game in terms of possession, wasn't it? So, but I think, give Vincent Kompany and Burnley credit. They played well on the night. And I think I saw a few shoots from them that may suggest that they've definitely got a chance or given themselves a chance of staying up. So I think, first and foremost, I think maybe people didn't give Burnley enough respect coming into the game. And perhaps I might have been guilty of that as well in some regards. But I think also I look at it and you've got to take the point, because I think we were talking where we, this time last year, everything, my mind goes back to that Fulham and the Bournemouth game, and there were certain aspects of this game that gave horrible flashbacks to Bournemouth at home last year. And I think Forest lose that game 12 months ago. And I think the fact they stuck at it, dug in, we'll come on to the VAR decisions in a minute, but Forest got a point that I don't think they would have got 12 months ago. And I think that shows progression in another way. I think the overall performance showed an element of progression, albeit probably not as polished as Forest will want. But I think that's the main thing for me, that Forest stuck at it and got a point out of a game that they would have likely lost 12 months ago.
Yeah, 12 months ago. I mean, the circumstances 12 months ago, though, were very different. I think 12 months ago, the whole squad was pretty much a new squad, right? So I think in comparing it to 12 months ago is slightly cheap. At the end of the day, I agree. I think Burnley might be slightly better than even I predicted. But also at the same time, you go into those games, and they're games that you go into to try and win. I still think it's a good point. I'm not being uber negative about it. I think it's a good point. I think where Forest are in the table right now, it's huge improvements. Everything that we've seen performance wise, I think also, it has to be said that you said going back to basics. I think it was a sign of a different way that they kind of want to approach games, especially at home. And even, I compared it to the Championship season where, they played the likes of Swansea and they just hit them on the break. But maybe they want to, try and show that they've got the upper hand in games and that they're the power team in most of the home games by having that possession and trying to play a certain way and being strong enough in that way. And that will have to come over a period of time, because your combination's now slightly different with Callum Hudson-Odoi in the team, who performed very well, and obviously we'll touch on that. But also, other players in there and new combinations between certain players. So that will come over a period of time. But, for me, you still aim to win that game, regardless of how much respect you've got for Burnley or not. But it is still, at this point, in terms of the games that have been played, Forest have shown huge signs of improvement.
Let's talk about the approach, because you've mentioned it a couple of times in the opening exchanges of this pod, if you will. There's a lot of talk. We did an episode a couple of years back on this very subject in terms of, even in the promotion season, we talked about the debate around is a 4-2-3-1 any more attacking than a 3-4-3? Because obviously, even in that season where Forest got promoted and were blowing teams away at the City Ground, there was still a frustration that Forest had played with at three centre-backs as opposed to a back four. And that the latter there, in terms of playing a back four, is far more attacking because you can get more attacking players on the pitch. The debate was had last week in the build up to this one, and we even obviously posted that out on Sunday ahead of the game, in terms of would Steve Cooper revert to a back four to try and get an extra attacker on the pitch, or would he stick with the formation that he's favoured all season? He obviously went for the back four, bringing in Sangare and Callum Hudson-Odoi into the mix. Did it surprise you in terms of the way he approached it, that he's basically reverted to a back four, or were you expecting it given the signings that he'd made and how he might want to approach home games, like you've just said?
No, it surprised me. It did surprise me, because I think Because I think I expected, yeah, it might change over a period of time. And I think we spoke about last week in terms of, well, you know, it doesn't matter if you start as a back five, because it might change to a back four anyway throughout the game or whatever. And that might have been the case in this one as well, in terms of players moving around and where they were in the pitch. But obviously, they started with a back four, and the players and the personnel they had has pointed and, you know, pointed towards that back four being the case of what it was in terms of setting up points in the game. So it did surprise me. I thought you might try and gradually maybe bring in new players to, you know, play different systems and different ways of playing. And I thought, you know, fullbacks wise, for example, we have a lot of fullbacks in the team that maybe are better as a back five fullback, and a lot of those fullbacks that have been brought in are more back five fullbacks rather than a back four. It did surprise me in terms of him changing. I'm not saying it did or didn't work, because I think, you know, you look at the first 20 minutes or so, maybe being slightly harsh, you know, Forest had a lot more of the ball than I was expecting them to have, which is, you know, obviously maybe what they were going for. And maybe the back five allows them to be a bit more counter-attacking. But it did surprise me a little bit in terms of the players that you've got. But obviously, I also felt like you maybe thought it was important to get Callum Hudson-Odoi, Alanga and Awoniyi and Gibbs-White all on the pitch at the same time. So, you know, you can't really do that by playing a back five unless you're playing someone kind of out of position. So, you know, obviously he felt that was important, and he felt like getting those certain players on the pitch were important. But it did surprise me in terms of the way that we know Burnley like to approach games and the way that Forest have approached games. Maybe he wanted to spring that surprise straight after the international break. I'm sure we'll see Forest play various different systems throughout the coming weeks. I don't think it's now or we're a back four team. I think there'll be very much games where we play a back five, but it did surprise me so soon for this one, I think.
I agree. I think the way you can look at the recruitment and then the way that Forest have recruited at fullback and at centre back, I wholeheartedly agree. It's a transfer window that has been set up to build a team that is capable of playing a back three. And I think first and foremost that would be the go-to formation. Steve Cooper talks about the need to be able to flip between a back three and a back four. I get that, 100% get that, and I can see why he did it on. I can see why he did it on Monday night. I personally was expecting him to go, if he went to a back four, revert to a 4-3-3, maybe pack that midfield with an extra body, because we know that Burnley likes to try and control the game in the middle of the park. That's obviously a system that Forest played a lot last season. That was their, I suppose, go-to system for that middle third of the season. I thought that might be the route that he goes down. But I can see why he tried to do it, and you can see glimpses of how that might work this season. But I definitely agree with you in terms of it feels like, you know, we talked on the pod last week with all the players that Forest have brought in. We can't just drop those players in. I thought it was interesting the players that he did put in and he left out, and which we'll come on to in a minute. But, you know, it's going to have to be an evolution, not a revolution. Forest wants to change the way that Forest play. You saw glimpses of that on Monday night.
Well, yeah, and all of it really should be irrelevant, to be quite honest, because it should be that regardless of how you set up, it will constantly change throughout the match and you will end up in different shapes anyway. I mean, obviously, it might be that your default formation is X, but actually, it should be so fluid that any talk of formation in modern-day football anyway is kind of irrelevant, because it does not matter. You know, what matters is the players on the pitch and, you know, how they're approaching it. The only thing I would say is, yeah, with a back four, and then your back three, five, whatever you want to call it, is that, yeah, as you've touched on there, your fullbacks will be less attacking, because they will constantly have in their minds that they have to be probably a little bit more defensively sound in that back four than that back five. But naturally, in modern day football, I think most fullbacks these days are better at attacking than defending. I mean, the debates around some of the top fullbacks in the world about, oh, they can't defend, they can attack. So it depends what you've got at your disposal in terms of what works best. But I would certainly say that, as we've touched on already, what Forrest kind of, you know, got in the window was as a, you know, a back five. And everything else above that was to give you wider options on the pitch. But yeah, I mean, anyone who says 4-4-2 because you've got two strikers on the pitch, for example, is more attacking than a 4-2-3-1, even in itself is... it's irrelevant, really, because then you've got less attacking players or less expandable players behind your two strikers. So then there's other things that you have to do. So it's all just how the players that you've got and how they best perform in certain formations. But certainly what has been, the most comfortable formation for Steve Cooper and Forrest before has been the back three, five. Obviously, they did change it up a little bit last season when they didn't think they had the players to do so. But then they looked better when they did revert back to that back three, five towards the end of the season. So it's an interesting one.
I'm sure it'll rage on. That debate is going to rage on.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure it'll be a whole season conversation, and there'll be certain games where we do one thing and another, But at the end of the day, it's not as relevant probably as it maybe used to be, when you're choosing your formation for fantasy football or on FIFA or whatever. It actually is probably a little bit less relevant than what we all think it is.
In terms of the game, Forest started off really well, didn't they? I thought the opening 15, 20 minutes, like you said, Forest had a lot of the ball. I suppose the only downside is that a lot of the ball looked good, movement was sharp. They didn't overly create a lot, did they? I think Hudson-Odoi had a long-range effort that was tipped round the post by the keeper. There's a couple of times where we were just screaming at them to have a shot, whether that be Hudson-Odoi or Gibbs-White. They got themselves into some really good positions, and Steve Cooper mentioned it in his interview, didn't he, after the game. They just made the wrong choice and the wrong choice at individual moments that meant the opportunity was lost. But I thought Forest started really well and then kind of faded away into the first half, and obviously then ultimately led to Burnley scoring before half time. Before we talk about the Burnley goal, what's your take on that opening kind of 15-20 minutes?
No, I thought it was nice. I think it was, again, it goes back to the setup of the game. It surprised me a little bit in terms of Forest maybe having the more dominance than I thought they were, but it was good to see certain players on the ball and maybe certain players gelling in an actual match day situation. And I think Steve Cooper summed it up well in terms of the whole game, really, not even that first opening 20 minutes. But, Forest had a lot of possession, but, maybe it was that final ball at times that killed them, and they didn't quite have that final pass. And again, it goes back to the approach really has always been, or mainly been, to be counter-attacking, especially with this group of players in the Premier League. So to have so much of the ball and to try and unlock teams, I've seen teams try and give Forest more of the ball because they know that Forest are good on the counter-attack and in certain phases of the game. So, for Forest to kind of shift that up so quickly was a surprise, but it was nice to see a little bit more dominance. We've spoken about Forest trying to have a little bit more possession and a little bit more control in games, especially since we've been up a level, and I think we saw that, we saw that a little bit more, but it was that killer pass. I mean, I know I kind of mentioned it to you on Monday night after the game, but a lot of it rang true in terms of, I just felt like it, in a Callum Hudson-Odoi interview, he said that Steve Cooper said to him, have a bit more, don't be afraid to go out there. Don't be afraid to express yourself. Be creative. Play with no fear. Do what you want. And I think you could see that with certain players, but I just felt like there was times also where certain players who was trying to mesh into the squad and gel into this squad maybe lost a little bit of structure, a little bit in terms of how they approach the game, especially going forward into that final third. But that will come over time. He will still continue to say to those players, be expressive, be creative, do whatever you think's best. But when you're trying to gel in new players and you also at the same time decide to try and play a slightly different way, or, you've now been given the option to be able to play in a slightly different way, now he's got the players that he feels are good enough to be able to do that, that's then going to take a little bit of time to see that full throttle and full effects that he's going to want it to come into effect with.
I like the look of that front four. I really like the look of that front four. I know watching some of the coverage back yesterday, the Sky guys were quite looking forward to seeing that front four and talked about how dangerous they were. You saw glimpses. I think you're absolutely right in what you say in terms of it not quite clicking yet, but that's got to be understandable. How many times those front four play together on the pitch at a time? We will see as per our last conversation. But I think, Alanga, Hudson-Odoi, Gibbs-White are 1 year. If they click, then I think that is a really exciting front four. And I think they will cause teams problems. And I think that was one of the major positives for me that, yes, it didn't quite click on the night. You know, lots of talk around Gibbs White hitting a kind of a 6 out of 10 mark at the minute, and he's not really stepped into first or second gear yet. But that's still to come, and I think there's enough there. And that was the thing I take out of this game more than anything. You could see what Forest want to become. You could see glimpses of being that possession side. You could see what they could do in terms of hurting teams. It's not going to happen overnight. The owner talks about it. The manager talks about it. We talked about it last week in terms of it's going to take time for this squad to now gel and develop. But I saw enough of it, and I was quite excited of what I saw in certain pockets on Monday. What I wasn't so excited about was the goal that Forest gave away, which was really sloppy down that right-hand side from both Montiel and obviously Worrell as well, got skinned on the byline. It's too easy, too sloppy to give away, certainly at that moment in time as well, right on half-time. Poor goal. I mean, in terms of Montiel and his performance, you know, I've heard a lot of people talk about it as being Bong-esque. It certainly wasn't a good performance. It certainly wasn't a good home debut for him. But I've seen a lot of people write him off already, and I think that's harsh. I think there's a bit of learning to do there. You could see a couple of them. I think Sangari's probably similar as well in terms of a little bit of a sharp realisation in terms of the pace of the Premier League and the structure maybe required in the Premier League a little bit more than other European leagues. I think to judge him and write him off after 60, 70 minutes is probably wrong. But I think he certainly wasn't the best home debut for him, was it? And I think that whole build-up to the Burnley goal, I think Steve Cooper will be having a few words with a couple of individuals this week.
Yeah, of course. I mean, calling him Bong-ass. I mean, Bong's a living legend.
Yeah, he is.
Bit harsh. You know, I think obviously it's a different level as well in terms of Bong's debut. And also, I think a couple of things on that also is he didn't have a good performance. I'm not trying to stick up for him because it was rubbish. But like, you know, he's playing in a back four again. He's a player that I would think would be more comfortable playing in a back five and having a little bit less.
I just say on that, Tom, because I was going to say after, but he was a little bit kamikaze at times because he was getting caught out of position. He was lunging into the ball. He was trying, because I think you're absolutely right. He is a player who would, you can play at a right back, don't get me wrong, but I think he's been again brought in with someone who can play on that right wing back. And you can probably see why he needs a centre half in behind him to try and protect. And unfortunately, Worrell was getting dragged out of position, which then left McKenna exposed. The whole thing kind of just fell down. And certainly that was evident for the first goal and at times in the second half, where he just did come out of position because he's so used to being able to push up higher, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, maybe it's just a little bit of a dose of reality in terms of, you know, I know it's going to sound harsh again. He did win a World Cup with Argentina, yes. But let's, you know, if we look at his career so far, let's maybe not give the high expectation. There's a couple more players I could say about that as well in terms of, I'm sure we'll come on to. But I think, obviously, there's been a huge amount of excitement for some of these signings, and that's great. And they are obviously a different level and a different pedigree to what we've been able to sign before. There's nothing wrong with getting excited about it. If you didn't get excited about it, then what's the bloody point? But, you know, maybe it's just a dose of reality there. I think it's, you know, a little bit harsh. Some of these players are going to have to get used to playing in the Premier League. I think we've heard that said from Steve Cooper, from Marinakis in his own statement as well. You know, some of these players are going to have to get used to things. So, look, it's, you know, wasn't a good debut. I'm not going to sit here and defend him otherwise, but I think, you know, it's going to take a little bit of time. And luckily, you know, Forest do have options for him. So if it takes a little bit of time for him to adjust, then, you know, it's not panic stations. We have got other options there as well. But, you know, it is going to be a little bit of an eye-opener for him. And as I said, maybe some other players that played their first game in the Premier League as well. I think it's just going to be that little bit of a learning curve. I mean, it don't get any easier with the next one. So
Forest got back into it just after second half. I wasn't saying just after second half, 15 minutes into the second half. What a goal it was. I mean, we couldn't quite believe it when it kind of curled into that top corner. Unbelievable finish from Callum Hudson-Odoi. Really did top off, you know, on the flip side of Montiel, someone who had a great home debut for Forest, Callum Hudson-Odoi. He was unbelievable. We've talked about how impressive I thought the potential of that front four could be. I think as the game went on, Callum Hudson-Odoi just got better and better and better. Really good. The amount of people in the last 24, 48 hours who have said to me, I can't believe he's only cost you £3 million, could already be signing of the summer window. There's a lot there. But I suppose it's the way Callum Hudson-Odoi played the game was really impressive to me. There's a lot of concern when Forrest signed him about his Achilles injury and whether that had robbed him of his pace and therefore what type of player would Callum Hudson-Odoi be. I think he was very smart, wasn't he, in the way that he played. I thought he was brilliant. He looked lively. I think the link-up play and the understanding that he will have with Morgan Gibbs-White will stand Forrest in great stead. But I just thought overall it was just a brilliant home debut.
Yeah, and I think if there was someone that you wanted to have a really good debut, it was probably him, because I think we're all understanding of the fact that maybe he's someone out of all the signings that could do with a bit of a confidence boost. And for him to unlock the player he can be, it's going to take confidence, it's going to take a good run of form for him. So the fact he's got off the mark so quickly, I think, is brilliant news for Forrest, because I think he will now go into other games going, yeah, you know, I'm still able to play as well as I always thought I could at this level as well. It was a brilliant finish. Forrest don't really score many goals kind of from well, you know, outside the box or even kind of just generally away from that central area of the box, you find, in terms of last season. So it was good to see a goal of that nature as well, I think, you know, at the City Ground, but also from Forrest overall. I think Morgan Gibbs-White could do with taking a bit of a dose of his own advice, because apparently he said to Hudson-Odoi at half-time, you know, play with a bit more confidence, don't be too nicey-nice. Nicey-nice is probably what I would say to Morgan Gibbs-White at the moment, you know, and that's not me being a huge critic, so he's obviously still a fantastic player, and I actually think he's still one of Forrest's most creative players, and actually there's a lot of work he does off the ball as well at the moment that I think a lot of people aren't recognising, but he could do with a little bit of, you know, taking his own advice as well. So if he can kind of do that along with Hudson-Odoi, you've got two players who are still very young, that have great potential and that will hopefully only get better as the season goes on. Because if Morgan Gibbs-White can unlock a bit more, you know, a few more goals to his game, then I think, you know, Forrest have a lot of options throughout the team in terms of players that can add in that area of the pitch. So, look, fantastic debut from him. So hopefully he can, you know, actually build on that. And then Forrest have probably one of the bargains of the summer if he can.
A lot of, you know, Forrest then had half an hour, and you're hoping that they can kick on and go on and get a winner. If anything, it kind of went the other way. And obviously Burnley had the biggest moments of the second half. And I think, you know, the second half boiled down to two VAR decisions ultimately, although my heart was in my mouth when the VAR came up for after Hudson-Odoi's goal, but that was absolutely ridiculous. But in terms of VAR, obviously Burnley did get a second, and then it was obviously ruled out from VAR. Before we get on to the VAR decision in terms of whether it was right or wrong, I suppose Scott McKenna, we talked about Scott McKenna this season, you know, being solid, got his frailties, obviously, from a pace point of view. Look, we'll come on to whether we thought the decision was right or wrong from a VAR perspective. But in terms of the situation that Scott McKenna got himself into for that second goal, is that another blot against Scott McKenna's copybook, if you like, in terms of how Sandberg was so able to almost just run past him and put the ball across for the Burnley player to lay in? Because it was another error, and why I mentioned at the start is that it was, you know, different, but you know, we did have flashbacks to that the Bournemouth game, last season where Scott McKenna made the error for the third goal. I just wonder, with the amount of resources that Forrest have now at centre half, is that going to give Steve Cooper some food for thought in terms of Scott McKenna's role within the starting 11, if you like, moving forward? Because I think Cooper alluded to it so much afterwards that whilst we got away with one from a VAR perspective, we shouldn't be getting ourselves into that position, should we?
No, I think you've got to be really careful, because, you know, a lot of people have been very complimentary at the start of the season about, you know, certain players being really solid so far this season. So to be erratic after one game and just say, right, they're not good enough now, I think would be wrong. But, you know, it's another example of why maybe there's still work to be done in that defence. And the additions that they've had and the depth that they hopefully now think that they've got at that level should hopefully mean that you're not keeping in players for the sake of thinking that you have to keep in players. So it'll be interesting because I think, you know, it was alluded to a lot in Steve Cooper's post-match interview about individual errors. And it won't be error number one for certain players, even this season. And there's examples from last season. So, look, there's plenty of games to come up. So, it's up to Steve Cooper and whether he thinks certain changes need to be made at centre-back. But there was, you know, not just that example for Scott McKenna. You know, we've already spoken about individual errors for the goal that was actually conceded. You know, do you just drop a player because of a mistake at this level? I don't think you can, but when there's a build-up of examples, then you have to take a look at it. So, look, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the upcoming. You know, Forrest did get away with that one, I felt, at the time anyway. And it was just so soft. It was just far too soft, really, that to give away. And the goal that was actually conceded, it was far, far too soft.
Two poor goals to give away. Yeah, I agree. Both of them soft. And if this one had accounted, I mean, this was a really soft one to give away. I mean, look, I had quite the argument with someone on Monday night in terms of whether this was a penalty or not. Whether this was a handball or not. What's your verdict? Obviously, we've had the hindsight now of being able to come home and watch it a fair few times yesterday. Is it a handball or should it have been a goal?
Well, I mean, the rules of what is and what isn't these days are just, I mean, mental. But, I mean, at the time, I felt like it wasn't handball. And I can remember...
Well, No one argued, did they? No one was appealing.
Yeah, and I can remember coming out of the stadium and hearing that maybe it was slightly harsh. You know, I have seen the replay since. Obviously, what people are arguing is it changes the direction of the ball very slightly. But I think, you know, it's harsh. I think it is harsh. I think the way I always look at decisions is if the shoe was on the other foot, would I be annoyed? And I'd be annoyed with that one. That's the way I always try and look at it. Look, I think 99% of people disagree with me when I was talking about the Man U penalty should have remained a penalty. But the way I looked at it was, well, if that was Forrest winning a penalty, I'd say, yeah, it should be a penalty. So, you know, with this one, when I look at it being a handball, and how, you know, does it make much of a difference, his hand being where it is, in terms of what happens next? No, I don't think so. So
I'm not sure where I sit on this one. I'm not sure where I sit. I, in terms of the naked eye, in terms of watching the game, obviously we're in the Trent end, so we're at the opposite end. But the fact no one from a crowd perspective behind in the lower Bridgeford or any of the defender, or goalkeeper, anyone appeals for it, I can kind of see why. It's ever so faint, isn't it? And maybe that's the one of the many downfalls, I suppose, of VAR. But if you slow anything down and watch it three or four times, as the referee did on Monday night, the more times I watch it, the more convinced I am that it is a handball. But to the letter of the law, it's not a handball, right? So direct to your point, it is nonsense because he's not the goal scorer. It has to have been a deliberate handball that creates a goal-scoring opportunity, is the way that I understand the rule. So to that point, yes, even if he touches his arm, he's not the goal scorer, and therefore a play can be allowed to run through, and he can pass it to his pal to put it in the back of the net. But for me, it's handball. It is handball. The way he moves his body, the way he moves his arm, whether he's just trying to shield the ball from McKenna, his arm touches it and it deviates it ever so slightly. So I don't think... Look, I think McKenna could have cleaned him out before, so he should have even got to that point. He should just clean the ball out and had done with it. But instead, obviously, tried to shield and Sanderberg got around him. But I think it hit his arm. So for me, after watching the VAR repeat God knows how many times, I'd say it was a penalty. I'd say it was a handball.
But when Forrest conceded a penalty at Man United and Danilo touched him, and that in the rules of the game was a penalty, but 99% of people our side were saying it shouldn't have been. We're flipping it a little bit.
I know we are. But look, it evens itself out. I disagree with the decision at Man United. This one evens itself out. I don't know. Not to sit on the fence, but I can see both flips. Like, if I was a Burnley fan, I'd be very annoyed. I get that. I do get that. But I do think it was a handball. But anyway, we sit on the fence as always. We disagree on that one. Let's talk about the second one, the sending off, which again people were saying to me is a harsh sending off. Burnley, to be fair on this one, Vincent Kompany had no complaints. He said it was stupid. He said he'd learn from it. It was a sending off. Again, a bit of a weird one, though, because it kind of just happened off the ball. I know, obviously, Yatesy went down and obviously, complained. But there was huge amounts of uproar, both in the stands and on the pitch. And obviously, VAR deemed that one a red card. I think that is a red. It's stupid. I don't know why he's done it. I think the Burnley reaction, both from the player himself when he's been given the red and Vincent Kompany post-match, would suggest it is a red. But again, I've had people say to me, that's not a red, it's a soft one. But you can't go around elbowing people, even if it is off a dig off. I did get what Vincent Kompany was saying, that in the Championship, that happens week in, week out, and nothing will be said about it. But this is the Premier League, there's cameras everywhere, that's going to get picked up. You can't do it.
Yeah, it's a red card. It's a red card, I think. The reaction probably is because not many other people have seen it, and because it's off the ball. But it doesn't matter if it's off the ball or on the ball in terms of what he does. I mean, I could, be playing defence midfield and take a shotgun to someone's ankle, if he's off the ball. But, it's a red card for that, isn't it? I think it's a bit more than a red card, actually, if I did that. But it's a red card. Yeah, I don't think there's any arguments about that one. You can't do what he did.
It was definitely a night of VAR incident, wasn't it? It was
every Premier League game is 90 minutes of VAR incident.
It's madness. I just want to talk about a couple of performances, individual performances. I've got four that kind of I want to pick up on and stand out. Sangare, Premier League debut. A lot was expected of him. Obviously, lots been talked about the fee, a lot of excitement around him. A lot was obviously said in the build-up. I like what Steve Cooper said in the build-up in terms of needing to sit him down and talk him through the Premier League, learning a bit from Freuler's experience last season. Mixed bag from a Sangare point of view. I wouldn't say a bad home debut at all. I think it's probably a little bit of a shell-shock reality of how quick the pace is in the Premier League. What I did think he did really well, he gave the ball away in a few instances, and there was obviously a couple of opportunities towards the end of the game where he gave the ball away in some real dangerous places, and I think that might have been tiredness and fatigue or what have you. But what I did like about Sangare's performance is that boy can read the game, can't he? There was a couple of really good interceptions, got a good block in, some good tackles in. I think from what you would want from a reading of the game, for Sangare looks the real deal. There's definitely, he's got the skill set, if you like, to do the job that Forest need. But again, when we're talking about Montiel, slightly different ends of the scale in terms of their debuts, but you need to give them time. It's not easy, is it, being dropped into a Premier League game, albeit, you're not playing the top six side, but it's still tough. But I really liked elements of his game of what I saw, and I've got no doubt that over time he will be a standout performer. Some of his interceptions in midfield, certainly in that first half, were outstanding.
Yeah, I think I put him in the learning curve area, again, with Montiel, I think, bracket. Yeah. That's what I was going for.
Yeah, I'll help you out.
But, there was real positives in terms of what he did over the game. I think, in this game week, he had the joint most amount of tackles and interceptions in the Premier League, joint first. I think there's about another three others as well. But, he's still in that area. And I think the one thing I did see a lot from him is his interceptions. And I think it'll be pivotal regardless of whether he's having a good day or a bad day or an indifferent day or whatever you judge him to have had, because I think without that kind of player, I don't think Steve Cooper would have even tried to have played maybe in the way that we played in that game, because I think he's pivotal to that, not just him as an individual, but having that type of player. Because I think what he also allows, which was really nice to see in someone who I thought was one of the best players on the pitch, was he allows Mangala to do whatever he wants to do. You know, it's not even just the forward players. You know, Mangala looks... I think Mangala's had a great start to the season anyway, to be quite honest. And, you know, maybe he's gone under the radar somewhat because he's not, you know, scoring goals and getting assists, but he's a bit of a nuisance in the middle of the park, and it means he's not necessarily playing a defensive role that maybe he wouldn't play usually, but he's now allowed to kind of roam a little bit in the centre of midfield. And so that's what he allows. He kind of allows us to have other players do their thing, whether that be the back four or the back five. I think that's what he'll allow you to do, to be honest. So, look, I think it's a learning curve for him, again, in terms of Premier League, in terms of the pace in comparison to the Dutch leagues. But there's signs there of that he could be an important player for us. And, you know, he's probably... You know, his criticism comes a little bit from the fee and the amount of, you know, not uproar, but excitement to do with his signing. But I can remember the same from Morgan Gibbs-White, you know, when he first joined last season, and maybe still in some respects why he gets maybe a little bit more criticism than others as well at the moment, because he's up there with your highest fees and top signings, if you like, marquee signings. So, you know, I think there's work there to be done, but I'd like to think that also when we're talking about his performance, and I mentioned this so many times, but he barely set foot in Nottingham before a couple of days ago to train. He signed, got blinded with the light show, as I said before, and then, you know, has gone away on international duty, come back, had a couple of days. So that has to play a factor a little bit. And I'm not sure how good, you know, his English is or anything like that. And he'll be trying to find somewhere to live. And, you know, people go, well, he's a footballer, that's all irrelevant, but it isn't really. No. So that has to be taken into account. But I think he will be maybe a slower burner than people expect. But I think he will, you know, there's still signs there of a player that will be important to us anyway in the short and long term. So.
Yeah, I thought Mangala was the player I was going to pick up. I thought he was absolutely outstanding on Monday night. I thought he wasn't playing necessarily in a defensive midfield role, but he was coming back and he was the one who was picking the ball up from the back four and getting Forrest moving. Thought he was absolutely outstanding. Didn't think it was going to be the pivot that he would go for. Thought Sangare might start alongside Yates, but really pleased he chose Mangala, and I think Mangala has taken that opportunity really well. And it's his shirt now, isn't it? So puts a bit of pressure on the others as well, because there's some decent talent waiting on the bench to come into the side. The other two I want to talk about is Matt Turner and Ola Aina. I think Matt Turner, for me, is just... I mean, again, he's got a battle on his hands to keep that shirt, but I think he's just getting better and better. I thought his commanding of his area was absolutely brilliant on Monday night. I think there was a couple of times in the second half where he came out and caught a couple of cross shots, if you will. And I thought he was brilliant. He gives that defence a lot of confidence. He made that really smart save in the first half as well, getting down low to his right-hand side. So really impressed with Matt Turner so far. And Aina's man of the match for me. I thought he was absolutely brilliant. The fact he's been a free signing, looks good on both the left and the right-hand side. Proper shut Burnley's danger man down when he flipped with Montiel and went over to the right-hand side. I'd be getting him on a longer-term contract already, because he looks an outstanding piece of business. And down that wing-back side, you know, if Forrest reverts to the wing-backs as well, he's good going forward. He's good defensively. I just thought he's absolutely outstanding. Probably... so far, my player of the season, Ola Aina. He's been absolutely quality. But there were some standout performances, weren't there, throughout the team. It was, you know, disappointing, not to go back to what we said at the start, disappointing that Forest didn't pick up the 3 points, but plenty to get stuck into here in terms of positivities.
Well, I think, yeah, we're talking about individual performances and you know, still coming away with a draw, but probably because those individual performances aren't yet connecting to the wider picture of the team and the wider setup of the team. I think that's the point of it, right? We can see some positives, but without that connectivity and that understanding between them all, it's always going to feel a little bit disconnected, and therefore you're not going to get the results as a result of that hard work from the individuals. That will come over time. You know, we've heard it from the media already in terms of always is signing those players that Forest signs. Is that going to disrupt them again? I don't think it's going to disrupt anywhere near the level that we had the disruption of last season. But I think there has to be an understanding that actually there's a little bit of work to be done here. There's a little bit of work, not in terms of the individuals, but how it all connects together for the greater good of the team and the results that we get. So, yeah, I think you're spot on with the other two that you've pointed out there. And I think once it all comes together, you know, there's a lot to be positive about, and certainly a lot more settled than last year, and a lot more in terms of the approach to the game, having a bit more control. That will all come over a period of time, I think, from what we're seeing from the performances that we've had.
Nice, easy game next up then. City away. I think Steve Cooper labelled it as one of the hardest games in European domestic football. It's probably hard to argue against that. They got their Champions League campaign off to a flyer last night. They were 1-0 down at home to Red Star. They won 3-1 in the end. Just the 5 wins from 5 in the Premier League. Beat Fulham 5-1 last time out at the Etihad. Pep obviously giving us some respect, talking about us being 2 times European champions. A little bit maybe tongue-in-cheek in his press conference last night. But, yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? It don't get much tougher, put it this way, in the Premier League. We've already been to Arsenal, probably the second best team in the league, but they're a long way off City, aren't they? And City do have some injuries. Their injury list is starting to mount up. Pep's already been bemoaning the amount of injuries he's got, but their squad's pretty good. I'm not sure they're going to be too worried. I think the team he put out last night, or, you know, on the bench, only had 6 outfield players, but those outfield players are still pretty good. And he started with Haaland and Alvarez up top last night. So Forest are going to need to be right on it here, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, it's the toughest game of the season. Really, it's the toughest game of the season. I don't think you get any tougher in terms of the Premier League winners and the Champions League winners. So they're the team to beat for everyone. Never mind us. So I think, it's going to be a really difficult challenge. I don't kind of read too much into anything Pep Guardiola said in his press conference
about us. He's
not wrong in terms of the facts, is he? But question his sentiments.
Motives.
And why he said it. Yeah.
I'm not sure he was being that complimentary to us, maybe slightly patronising. I do like Pep, but so we'll give him the benefit of the doubt. But he can jog on for that one. But it is it is difficult, right? Because City, he's bemoaning his injuries. You look at City's, next 3 or 4 games. So you've got Champions League again. They've got League Cup. I believe they've got Arsenal around the corner as well. So this one might be a game where Pep Guardiola would look to maybe rotate, maybe give other people a go. He's still got the likes of Calvin Phillips on the bench, etc. Can you see him mixing this up? I suppose he can't really afford another injury to a Haaland or an Alvarez or I suppose any of those attacking midfielders that he's got. Does he mix it up, or does he just go again? And to be honest, does it really matter? Because his bench is still pretty, the players that he can bring in are still pretty solid, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, to be quite, he might mix it up slightly. I think, his team that he plays midweek is... It's still bloody strong, isn't it? but the players on the bench, if he brings in Jeremy Doku, I think he tore as a new one in pre-season, and he's a very fast, direct player.
I forgot about him.
Exactly. And, people like Vardiol that they've got on the bench and Akanji, I don't think it really makes a lot of difference. If anything, I could argue that some of those players improving. They were playing Sergio Gomez in midweek. I would say Akanji's better than him. I would say Vardiol is, potentially better than Nathan Ake. And you could argue that Doku is better than Mateus Nunes. So, if anything, if they make a few changes, it's probably only going to make them a little bit better. And if they do drop one of their players, let's say they... Silva's obviously now injured, so maybe Doku comes in for him rather than Nunes, but you've still got the likes of Phil Foden and Erling Haaland, and, Rodri is kind of their kind of main man in the middle of the park. I can't see Calvin Phillips getting a start anytime soon. So
you're not making me feel any better, pal. You're not making me feel any better.
Look, I suppose the thing that I know people hate it when you say this, but Forrest just got to go there and put in the best performance that they can. I don't think there's going to be many that are expecting 3 points for sure. We'll just try and pull off a surprise. Look, they got absolutely hammered there last season. They need to avoid that kind of performance. That, again, was early doors when it was a whole new squad and they were gelling. And so it's a difficult comparison to make. So people will be hoping maybe a little bit of a similar performance to what happened at the City Ground. But again, you know, you're talking about going away to the Etihad, which was slightly different to playing at home at the City Ground, where maybe those players are a little bit less comfortable. I'm not going to sit here and say, yeah, I'm expecting Forest to put on a worldly performance. It's more of a hope that they can, you know, show improvement on last year, show some of the away performances that they've had so far this season. You know, albeit some of those really good teams they've played are maybe not going through the best periods at the moment, in terms of Chelsea, for example, but they've still put on a really good performance against a really good group of players. So they've got to hope to be able to do that again at City. And just hope that, you know, you've also got to kind of hope that the likes of Haaland, you know, who's had a couple of bad games recently, maybe that's, you could argue, has come at a good time for us, but you could also argue that he's going to be proper angry and going to go for it against Forest on Saturday. So you just got to hope that maybe another couple of bad individual or off-form performances for Man City, and Forest put in a good display like they have done in some of their away games so far, and it reaps the rewards. But yeah, it's going to be hard.
You've brought me back around. You've been labelled as positive, Tom, by listeners. So I was hoping you were going to end that on a high. But yeah, not bad. You brought me back around.
I can't bullshit too much, can I?
You can't bullshit on this one. I mean, in terms of the way that Forest set up here, it's going to be the same. We don't need to go into it really too much, because obviously we've talked on the pod last week about how Forest set up away from home. This is going to be... I can't imagine he reverts too far away from the... whether you want to call it a 5 potentially away from home, but a 3-5-2, pack the midfield, Gibbs White in and behind, a 1-ye, that tends to be the go-to. Probably a little bit harsh on Hudson-Odoi, harsh on Anthony Elanga, but you can certainly see him going back to that kind of tried and tested that's worked so well ever since that Liverpool away game back in April. I mean, if people, you know, who comes in, who misses out, basically, on a 3-5-2? And do you protect the new signings by taking them away from this one? Or do you throw them very much in at the deep end? Because I'm thinking, if you're packing that midfield out, I mean, hard to drop Sangare and Mangala after Monday night. Does Yates come in or do you throw Dominguez in?
I think he'll probably keep Sangare in. Look, playing Man City, you're playing Man City at the end of the day, right? So, you know, your confidence, I don't think it's going to take, unless it gets really bad, it's probably not going to take too much of a knock. I think your question marks are more of, for me anyway, you know, you've got a player whose confidence needs to be managed really carefully in Callum Hudson-Odoi. Would it be harsh to drop him? You know, he'll only be able to play probably a certain amount of this 60 game.
60 anyway. Minutes, maybe, without the ball.
So, you know, would it be harsh to drop him? In which case, are you asking whether Morgan Gibbs-White drops onto the bench? You know, I like Elanga coming off the bench in these away games, because it seems to always cause some confusion and unexpectation from the opposition team, even though it should be quite clear by now what he brings to the team and why we might be bringing him on. So, you know, I would understand dropping him, and I hope he'd understand that too. But I wonder whether there'll be something in Steve Cooper's mind going, let's keep Hudson-Odoi in just in case, you know, if he can, you know, build on his confidence that he's built. People might look at that the opposite way and go, well, you say you need to, you know, carefully manage his confidence, so maybe drop him to the bench for this one. But I would just wonder whether he'd appreciate the nod after the performance he put in at home.
Tough one, isn't it, with Hudson-Odoi?
Yeah, again, like, you know, it's going to be difficult. How far is going to get loads of chances at the Etihad? No. But could, you know, he could be the difference maker. You just don't know. And you know, who's more confident after scoring that goal, you know, albeit he's not played loads of football before that game. Is Hudson-Odoi more confident right now? And does Gibbs-White maybe need a small breather?
Potentially. I know what you're saying. I perhaps think the lack of football that Hudson-Odoi has had in the last 18 months might work against him. Steve Cooper might want to just manage him a little bit, ease him into it. Forrest aren't going to have a lot of the ball at the Etihad. So, you know, Callum Hudson-Odoi is going to spend a lot of time running. And I haven't seen enough of Callum Hudson-Odoi yet to obviously comment on work rate, etc. But what you do know is that Gibbs-White puts a shift and he can play slightly deeper. He can pack, add another body in that midfield, centre midfield area if required. And you know that whilst his attacking prowess hasn't been great so far this season, he's definitely put a shift in and he contributes, as you said earlier on the episode, in other ways. So that's the interesting call. I think it's a Hudson-Odoi or Gibbs-White. I think the midfield, you know, you're going to pack that out. And I think your fullbacks probably pick themselves post Monday night as well. But it will be interesting. But I think Forrest will go back to that wing-back formation. Go on, give us a score prediction for this one then.
I'm going to go slightly less positive for this one. I'm going to go 3-0 Man City.
Yeah, I think City. I don't think there's any disgrace in Forest getting beat at Man City. They are a very, very good side. Yeah, I think Forest will concede a couple. I'm going to go 3-1. I think Forest will score. Yeah, I think it's a tough afternoon at the office, this one. But we expect that. These aren't the games that for, you know, it's not beyond realm that Forest can go there. Everton went there, I think, last year and got a point. Look how bad Everton were. They got a bit of a shock last night, albeit in the Champions League, but they got a shock last night against Red Star. So they're not infallible, Man City, but I do think that they've got a lot of strength in depth there. And I think this is probably a bridge too far for Forest at this point. So, yeah, I do expect Forest to come away with defeat at the Etihad. But it'll be promised to be another good afternoon, a Saturday, 3:00. You're making the journey up there. So it'll be an enjoyable day, I'm sure, no matter what. So yeah, it'll be a good one. Right, let's end on a guess who. Last week's guess who, could have used him for this one really as well, was obviously Gareth Taylor. What a ledge. One of my favourites. He was a short career, but I did like Gareth Taylor.
He was better at volleyball than he was at football. But,
liked him at centre-half, mate. Liked him at centre-half, as probably sums up the Megs in year. But this week's guess who. So the tedious link, this one, if you like, between Forest and Man City. So he joined Forest on a pay-as-you-play deal in 2001 after leaving City. He made just 17 appearances, scoring 2 goals, one of them being a wonder free kick, if I remember right. Left to join Leicester in 2002, making 29 appearances. Later joined Bradford in the Premier League, making 68 appearances for the Bantams. Who is that? Get your answers on a postcard. Get your answers on social. Let us know who you think that is. Brilliant episode, Tom. Really enjoyed that. I'm glad we gave it a bit of time. I think there's plenty to mull over there. If you've enjoyed it, please follow us on Spotify and Apple, leave a review. It really does help. You can obviously email us at timeaddedonpod@outlook.com and give us a follow on @timeaddedonpod. Tom, enjoy your trip up to the Etihad on Saturday. Safe travels, few beers, I'm sure. And we will be back next Monday, probably with a Brentford preview, Man City review, and Forest have got 3 points at the Etihad. But everyone going up there, enjoy it. Come on, you Reds.